the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Do you know what your daughter is reading this summer? Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today we're going to talk about a phenomenon that is really reshaping the publishing industry, and it has our kids as targets. And what we have noticed in recent years is that there's a whole new way of mainstreaming pornography. And for adult women, pornography is now being marketed and merchandised as romance novels, and you know them from the airbrushed eroticism on the cover to the very, very steamy sex scenes within, and they're being sold to women as a way to understand romance and all the rest, but really it's just pornography for females. And now there is a similar product line that is intended for adolescent girls, for teen girls, and we're going to be talking about a couple of these books today, and we're going to be talking about a major shift in the culture that produces this kind of very, very attractive pornographic literature for teenage girls. And we're also going to be talking about the fact that it is published by what has been one of the most trusted names in the publishing world. More about that later. First, a review of the news. The big story, of course, today is the apology that has come from Newsweek magazine for a report that ran in its May 9 edition about a supposed desecration of the Quran. And as you know, this led to riots in the streets of several Arab cities. It led to unrest in the Middle East, as many as 20 deaths and more directly attributed to this report, outrage against the United States of America. There were reports on the street in the Arab world that this had precipitated an outrage unlike anything since the initial invasion of Iraq by American and allied forces. Now Newsweek says that its source on this issue is no longer considered authoritative. It may never have happened. Newsweek's editor says this is not a retraction, it is an apology. A retraction would imply that they know the report is not true. They say they actually don't know that, but they are nonetheless apologizing for running the story without adequate documentation. The report had been that a Quran had been flushed down a toilet, and it did set off widespread anti-American protests in Afghanistan and also in other parts of the Arab world. Now, this raises a host of ethical and moral issues. Number one, about truth-telling. Obviously, the responsibility of the press to tell the truth, the responsibility of the mainstream press, the responsible press to make certain that we know what we're talking about. This raises also the particular sensitivities involved in reports about the desecration of something like the Quran, which anyone who knows anything about the Middle East should know would set off a firestorm. And so it has. There is responsibility here, and yet I want to say Newsweek is taking responsibility, at least thus far, and apologizing for running the story. And yet, as American and Pentagon officials have said, it's one thing to apologize for the story. It's another thing to apologize to those who are the victims of the outrage, the riot, and the violence that followed this report. Obviously, this story will bear watching, and we will continue to do so. Big news out of Great Britain on the abortion front. A report that has now been released in the British Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology says that abortion is now linked to premature births and difficulties with premature births in subsequent pregnancies. This is the first authoritative study, and it provides what the media in Great Britain are calling conclusive evidence of a link between induced abortion and subsequent preterm births. The idea here, the medical link, is indicated by damage to the woman's reproductive system. In particular, the cervix that makes it more difficult for her to carry a baby to full term in subsequent pregnancies. And, of course, the big issue here is how the abortionists are going to respond to this, how the abortion rights movement is going to respond to this. This is a clear concern about the health of women. And I go back to the fact that when you understand that abortion, at whatever stage and by whatever technology, is the killing of a life within a woman and is the removal of that life from that woman, you have to know that there must be medical consequences. Of course, we want to face honestly the moral consequences, but the medical consequences are a reminder that nothing like this can take place without an effect. And this is an important story, and like the others, we're going to watch this to see exactly how the abortion rights movement responds to this, and I think we can predict the response. Speaking of predicting, you can predict that Nicholas Kristof is going to like John Shelby Spong's latest book. Nicholas Kristof is the columnist for the New York Times that seems to relish every opportunity to criticize American evangelicals. And what he finds particularly troubling is our belief that the Bible is the Word of God. That is so far beyond his understanding, he just can't fathom why we would believe such a thing. And I have, in my weblog and commentaries, just recorded article after article that I have responded to from Mr. Kristof, in which he just goes after evangelicals as if we are so odd to believe in miracles like the virgin birth, to believe in the God, the fact that God created the world, to believe in the teachings of the Bible. Now, in Sunday's edition of the New York Times, he is out with a fascinating article which is entitled Liberal Bible Thumping. He suggests that what liberal Christians need to do is take Christians on their own terms, that is, about the Bible. And here he champions Bishop John Shelby Spong, the retired and notorious former Episcopal Bishop of Newark, New Jersey, who has a new book out entitled The Sins of Scripture, which we're going to talk about in an entire program on this radio show coming up in the next few days. But he just loves this book because what he sees in Bishop Spong is a way to debunk the Bible. Can we really worship the God found in the Bible who sent the angel of death across the land of Egypt to, says John Shelby Spong? What about 1 Samuel 15? Well, that just means that John Shelby Spong can't believe in the Bible because he wouldn't believe in a God who would inspire such a text. Same thing about the virgin birth. Same thing about the Apostle Paul. He suggests that the Apostle Paul is a repressed homosexual. Bishop Spong has been out with this theory for a long time. It shows you where he is, and that demonstrates something of the deep sickness at the heart of the Episcopal Church USA. But now we have Bishop Spong repackaging his heresies in a new book, and of course it finds a friendly reception on the op-ed page of the New York Times Sunday's edition. Now, speaking of the idea that the Apostle Paul is a repressed homosexual, that's why he seems to have a hang-up about homosexuality according to the secular left. And in John Shelby Spong, what I guess we would have to call something like a religious left. I won't call it the Christian left, but we'll just leave it at a religious left. Frank Rich, who is one of the most acidic and acerbic writers in the New York Times, and one whose hatred and condescension towards conservative Christians is just palpable. You can almost taste it just as you're reading his articles. He's out with a story also in yesterday's edition of the New York Times entitled, Just How Gay Is the Right? And here's his theory. He has a theory about why we have concerns about homosexuality. It is because he believes that that we're closeted homosexuals or we're repressed homosexuals. And he suggests that all this just comes down, any animosity, and that's what he calls it, if you just won't go with the homosexual agenda, you respond with what he labels as animosity. But he says that it's a pattern of repressed homosexuality, and he identifies some conservative activists who were indeed homosexual, and one who is a homosexual, and by the way, he's been right out there, but he's not a conservative Christian activist. He may be a politically conservative, but, you know, what you have here is just a reminder that the secular left doesn't understand conservative Christians, and I think doesn't want to. I mean, this is the kind of ignorance you have to work hard at achieving. This is not the kind of ignorance that comes just from living in a swamp in some kind of secular vacuum for years. This is the kind of ignorance that comes from not wanting to know, not being willing to admit the truth about the rank-and-file Americans in flyover country. That's what they consider it, between the left coast and the east coast. The rest of us, they just fly over. Red America, that's just the terrain they fly over. And they really don't want to understand where so many conservative Christians are. Frank Rich has really targeted us in times past. He's let the double-barrel shotgun of his pen go at us over everything from abortion and concern over morality and truth, now to suggesting that the reason that conservatives have hang-ups about homosexuality is because we have, well, hang-ups about homosexuality. How about human eggs for sale? In my weblog over the weekend, I wrote about the case of Jen Littlefield, who is a co-ed at the University of Chicago, who now identifies herself as a donor for eggs. She responded to an advertisement with an agency. She was paid $5,000 for her eggs and for undergoing the procedure that secured them for use by another woman. She told the Chicago Maroon, that's the university student newspaper, that she was motivated at least in part by the knowledge that she herself had been conceived with the use of donor sperm. She says she didn't know that until age 19. Well, it's a fascinating story about how this college co-ed went through the process, a 14-page medical history, all kinds of psychological and legal screenings and all the rest, including hormonal treatments. The eggs were removed from her, She says she's really not concerned about her own genetic heritage. She says you kind of separate yourself and know that, yes, your genes are going to be there, but it's not your child because you're not raising it. She also says, and I quote, genetics are a crapshoot anyway. Well, maybe not. Because most of those who are on the market to buy eggs want a particular kind of egg from a particular kind of donor. Right down to hair color, athletic ability, IQ, and all the rest. And, oh, yes, she had to supply a photograph. Well, it tells us a lot about where we are in America that here you have a woman who was conceived with donor sperm who now is donating her eggs, at least for $5,000. What will the next generation sell? We'll be back to talk about this big change in literature for young girls. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're going to talk about something that has caught my attention in recent days. I'm in bookstores a lot looking at what Americans are reading. And out on the flat table, just with some other summer books, were a couple of titles that caught my attention because, first of all, of the cover. And then because they are clearly targeted to adolescent girls. And it's not as if I wasn't expecting something like this. I've been tracking for some time what's been happening in terms of the publishing industry and teenagers. And we've done a lot of talking on this program about video games and pornography and other issues that are particular issues for teenage boys, but this has to do with teenage girls. The titles of these two books are Next Summer and Summer Boys. Summer Boys came first. It's a series. The author is Haley Abbott, and these two books are published by Scholastic. And most of us remember Scholastic from book fairs. And you associate Scholastic with safe books, books with an educational purpose. And let me tell you, these books are educational, all right, but it's something I think most parents would have no idea of the subject matter being covered. Now, I mentioned in the opening that there is a new development in terms of pornography, and it's new as in the last decade or so, and that is that the romance novel has become mainstreamed as a way to package pornography, in this case, narrative pornography, for women. And I use that phrase, narrative pornography, because males, given the way males are constituted, are more attracted to visual pornography. But females tend to be more directed towards narrative pornography. And there are some who say, well, it's not the same thing. You shouldn't call it pornography. Oh, yes, it is, because its sole purpose is to excite an erotic arousal. And that's exactly what many of these romance novels do. Just look at the covers, these airbrushed erotic covers of obvious sexual contexts, and then the narratives that go into explicit sexuality. But now for teenage girls, you have books like Summer Boys and Next Summer, and they're being packaged by publishers such as Scholastic in order that girls could pick these up. I want to tell you what's in them. I think most parents will be absolutely horrified to know what's in them. In these two books, we find a cast of beautiful, wealthy, fashionable, and oversexed teenagers. And I have to tell you right up front, the sex scenes are far too explicit to be quoted here. But in the book Summer Boys, there's a run-up to a sex scene I'm going to read you here. And just listen to this, and I'll let you imagine what follows. This is how it's set up. Ella walked into the dunes, not knowing what else to do. She climbed the first mound of loose sand, her feet sinking with each step. She descended to a small valley, then climbed again. She reached top and froze. Down the hill in front of her, Peter was lying on his back, his body propped up against the next rise. He'd taken his shirt off and tucked it in behind his head. He looked incredible, sprawled against the sand, his bronze skin glinting in the moonlight. Ella looked at his flat stomach and noticed that the top button of his shorts was undone. Well, that's where we jump off. And let me just tell you that that's where, for the book, the story picks up. And what you have are these sex scenes between young teenagers. They're set in a beach community over the summer. These girls, by the way, are wearing the latest fashions. And this book is in some ways, or these books, are a primer in terms of how girls can sexualize themselves. They're even told what kind of fashions to wear and from what stores. The characters who are presented here as idealized adolescent girls, they buy their clothes at Abercrombie & Fitch and Anthropologie. They carry Kate Spade purses, and they have the latest fashions, they're up on the latest lingo, and they know how to eroticize themselves. That's the big thing here. They wear the kind of shirts that show off their physical attributes in such a way as to attract the attention of boys. And girls reading this are more or less told in textbook style, disguised as a narrative, this is how you do it. This is how you get a boy's attention, and this is how you keep a boy's attention, and the keeping of it is where you get to the sex scenes. Now, what's interesting to me in this is that there's something of a role reversal, because the girls are really the sexual predators here, and the boys are the prey. And the boys are described in largely sexual terms, in terms of physical attractiveness, and we're right down to their attributes. And, you know, that is something that I think is simply revolutionary in terms of at least recent adolescent life. And it tells us something of how the feminist movement plus this pornographic revolution and all the rest have come together to the end that a company like Scholastic Incorporated feels that it can safely and profitably package this kind of material for teenage girls. Now, I started off the program by asking you as parents, do you know what your daughters are reading? I want to suggest to you that you better check that book bag, because this kind of literature is gaining ground. If girls were not buying it, the publishers would not be selling it, and the bookstores would not be retailing it. But this is big business. I want to know what you as parents think about this. I want to know what this represents in terms of a new challenge to us as parents. I want to know what this tells us about what this society is saying about and saying to teenage girls in terms of expectations, in terms of sex. The sexual exploration and the sexual adventures in these books are presented as learning experiences whereby these girls claim their womanhood. Completely missing from this is any notion of a biblical view of sexuality. And frankly, any kind of limitation other than what these girls would draw in terms of their own personal autonomy of what young people should and shouldn't do. And let me tell you, they're doing a lot in these books, right down to consummating the act of sex itself. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about narrative pornography in books directed towards teenage girls. Young adult literature is what the bookstores call it. And there's an emphasis upon the adult, not so much upon the young, but they are directed right towards our girls. And it says a whole lot about an entire cultural revolution that is reshaping the way America thinks and, of course, the way America is behaving. You just look at the rates of sexual activity, and something has happened. Girls are all of a sudden becoming, just as the characters in these books, adventuresome and aggressive in terms of sexuality. They are being told that the way to be popular, the way to be fashionable, and the way to be emotionally fulfilled is to have conquest of a boy. And that conquest is sexual. Now, they are being told that they empower themselves by making their own decisions. But in reality, this is just another way of packaging pornography for teenagers, and it's a seduction into a sexualized lifestyle that you and I both know will bring enormous pain, enormous hurt, and damage into the lives of these young girls and the boys with whom they are sexually adventuresome. It's hard to talk about this without being more explicit than we would want to be on this program. That's one of the difficulties, because I want to convey to you the sense of urgency in what these books represent. But you're really going to have to take a look at them yourselves if you're going to know more than what I've been willing to say is in these stories. But I really think we know enough already to know that we're facing something very significant here in terms of a challenge with our daughters. My wife and I, we have a 16-year-old girl. I cannot imagine her reading these books, much less behaving in this way. I'm concerned that we're living in a society that would package this as normal, as attractive, and as idealized. But that's the world in which we're living. The books are Summer Boys, and next summer the author is Haley Abbott, the publisher is Scholastic Incorporated, and the target is your daughters. Give me a call and tell me what you think about this. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We are in big trouble, folks. We have to watch what our kids are hearing and reading, the friends, and the idealized pictures that are being held out in front of them as what they should aspire to be and to do themselves. Give me a call. I want to know what you think. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back, America. You know, all over this country, schools are getting out. The summer season is beginning, and a lot of people are turning to the kind of books they plan to read for the summer. And for high school, junior high, even elementary school students, this is an opportunity to read some of the things they couldn't read while they were in the process of the formal academic year. And these two books, they're just illustrative of the problem I want to bring to parents' attention. I think we as Christians need to be aware of these things because, first of all, they signal a seismic change in the culture. And secondly, they are real-life challenges for our children. And if you just take your kids to the local bookstore and you just set them loose, this is what's out on the table. Now, let me mention, the covers on these two books are very explicit, showing half-naked kids, teenagers. They're at the beach, but the looks on their faces are not about contemplating the waves. The back of the books tell you a whole lot. On the back of the books, of the book Summer Boys, you read this. First boy, first love, first time. It's summer, it's hot, it's time to hook up. In its sequel, Next Summer, on the back it says, three girls, too many boys, one tempting summer. Things are heating up again. Can you handle it? Well, I don't think most parents could handle this. Especially as it turns these girls into sexual predators and idealizes a picture of adolescent girlhood that is highly sexualized, eroticized, and empowered by her decision as to how she's going to use her sexual power to attract and keep boys and their attention. And the sex scenes are steamy, and the moral message is very, very clear. Let's go to Christina calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on WHK. Christina, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you. I just want to tell you that I wholeheartedly agree with everything that you're saying. I am a mother of a teenage son, and I have firsthand witness of the way girls are behaving, and your word predator is absolutely correct. I mean, they literally prey on bullies. They're so forthright and forthcoming, and they constantly phone my home. Whereas my day, a girl waited for a boy to give her a call, but it's just nonstop.
Now, Christina, I want to ask you, because you can help me here. I need a female consultant, and you can really help me here. What has brought about this change? Let me mention one thing in particular. You have a teenage son. I want to know how old he is. I think that would help us here too. But aren't you concerned for him, even by how girls dress and how they talk?
Most definitely. I don't even know how parents let their girls leave their house the way they're dressed and the way they behave. And I truly think that too many parents just want to be their daughter's friend and not their parent. And they want to be the cool mom and dad. And even at the age of 14, 15, he was invited to like a boy-girl overnight New Year's Eve party, which is wrong, completely wrong.
Well, I gather, Christina, you didn't let him go.
Absolutely not.
Well, God bless you for that. I'm thankful for at least some parents who have the sanity to say no and the courage, and God bless you for that. Christina, I want to ask you one more question here because you're really helping us. What do you think has to change in the culture or in the entire moral context for girls to feel like they're supposed to be this kind of sexual predator?
What do we need to do so they don't have to?
No, I'm saying, what do you think has changed? I guess what I'm looking for here, and this is where having a female voice speak to this is really important. Don't you think this represents the lowering of some kind of barrier that in previous generations had been there that protected girls from this kind of expectation?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And we need to teach our girls to be young ladies.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that word from the mother of a teenage son. That tells you a whole lot right there. Christina, thank you for your call. to join this conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Lori, listening on WTBN, calling from Clearwater, Florida. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I just wanted to comment that, you know, my daughter is not a teenager yet, but I could only imagine if this is the beginning, what's going to happen in the next few years. You know, it seems like we're inching our way over the line constantly.
Now, let me ask you, Lori, do you have trouble finding clothing for your daughter? All right, we lost Lori there. That's one of the hazards of the cell phone. But nonetheless, she made a very, very important point, and that is that we have got to be very much aware that our kids are targets. And she's talking of her daughter's not even a teenager yet. But, you know, even her daughter in elementary school is being presented with a picture of idealized adolescence by the culture. And all little girls are going to grow up to be big girls, and they want to know what kind of big girl they're supposed to grow up to be. And that picture is the problem, at least as it's being presented by our very, very sexualized culture. I want to know what you think. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Mueller. The mainstreaming of pornography is one of the major movements in America today. It impacts our consumerist culture, our economy. If you were able to trace all the dollars that went in and through the pornographic industry, the pornography industry, you would be absolutely shocked. Some estimate as many as one out of every $7 runs through some form of eroticized entertainment or product line or something similar. You put that together with gambling and all the other things, and you can see that a great deal of our economy is really being propped up by what we know ought not to be there in the first place. But when you're talking about children, you're talking about teenagers, well, a lot of us as parents have known that we've got real issues with our teenage sons in terms of protecting them from internet pornography and from the kind of visual pornography and violence and all the rest that's being marketed directly to them. And we're long accustomed to having adolescent males presented in the culture as sexual predators and kind of this idealized picture of the teenage boy sowing his wild oats and sexual exploration and adventure and all the rest. And we know as Christians, and especially as Christian parents, that our task is to redefine the issues, to ground our sons in a biblical worldview and to lead them to aspire to something far higher than this cultural expectation. But it's something new when we have to look at our daughters in the same way, recognizing that they also are targets of an eroticized, sexualized culture that now wants to really target them with a form of customized pornography that presents an idealized picture of adolescent girlhood that is highly eroticized, highly sexualized, and frightening, just to tell you the truth. I want to know what you think about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. The particular issue for us is how we as parents respond to this and how we understand how something like this could come to pass. 877-893-TALKS, the phone number. We're going to go to Lisa calling from Clearwater, Florida. Lisa, go right ahead.
Hi, I had a couple points to make. First of all, you're right on, you hit the nail right on the head with the empowerment thing. Rather than packaging self-respect as empowering, it is definitely packaging this aggressive take what you want attitude as being the empowering thing. But the other thing is, it's not new. And it's often a lot more subtle than the books that you're talking about. 25 years ago, I got indoctrinated into this thought process by Cosmopolitan magazine. Same thing. And so it's not new.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not new, Lisa, in terms of an idea. I think it is new in terms of publishers like Scholastic being willing to come up with product lines that that mainstream this to teenage girls, even being sold through book clubs and all the rest. I think that's new. You know, I think it's true that an awful lot of girls were reading their mother's Cosmopolitan or sneaking peeks in the grocery store. But I think it's different when these are packaged as young adult literature for teenage girls. And Lisa, I appreciate your call. It's a good reminder that these kind of temptations have been around for a long time. I mean, after all you have to know is the name Delilah to know that women as sexual predators, that's not a new idea, not a recent development. But being targeted as idealized adolescents for teenage girls, I think that is a new development. Let's go to Dan calling from Jasper, Indiana. Dan, welcome.
thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to comment on this, you know, this level of what's acceptable with the teenage girls and the way they dress and behave. And, you know, something that kind of disturbs me, and I've, through various relocations and work, we've lived in Atlanta and Dallas and have attended nice churches, but I think it's a message that is missing from the pulpit. I mean, we can reinforce the message in our home with our girls, but it would sure be nice to have, you know, the pastors reinforce the modesty that the Bible teaches and the way men and women both present themselves and how that's, you know, reflects their walk.
You know, Dan, you're exactly right. I want to ask you a question. Why do you think so many churches fail in this responsibility?
Well, I'm kind of reminded of, I guess, an old saying about, you know, what you preach about until the mortgage is paid off. So I feel like, you know, maybe it's too offensive if you look out there and you see all these parents allowing their daughters, especially to dress in such a provocative manner that maybe a leader of a church just feels like, wow, I'm going to offend too many people if I go in this direction.
You know, Dan, I promise you that you're right, because any pastor or youth minister or church leader who decides to take this on is going to receive a great deal of controversy and criticism. I could just give you as evidence my wife, who wrote an outstanding booklet on this entitled Modeling Modesty. And you can find it, by the way, at my website at albertmuller.com under other articles. You'll find it there available in PDF form. You can download it for free. It's an excellent resource, and yes, I can tell you that if you take this on, you're going to be called judgmental and narrow and all the rest. And you know what? I am just absolutely certain that we as parents are going to have to live with those labels, because the cost of not living with them is just far too high. Let's go to Jennifer calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I really enjoy your show. I was just calling to say that I am in that adolescent category that you're talking about, and I absolutely agree that it's totally wrong the way that they're targeting it against us. And I think we as young Christian women just need to step back and look at ourselves. And if you're calling yourself a Christian, look at the way that you're dressing, because you're really putting out that persona to the world, and they're going to see you as, you know, your dress really says a lot about you, and the way that you act towards the opposite sex really says a lot about you. So you really should, you know, keep up a good persona to others. And I totally agree with Dan. The pastor should be preaching it more from the pulpit.
Well, Jennifer, it means a whole lot to hear from you, and I want to thank you for calling it. And I want to ask you a follow-up question here. Do you think that that your friends or the girls you know in school would be attracted to this kind of book? You know, someone is buying these books. Do you have any idea why?
I think that a lot of times the girls, I know, especially with my sister at home, she feels like that she's not pretty enough, or, you know, she has to dress this way or get a certain or act a certain way that these books teach her how to act to catch a man. And I'm telling you, girls out there, if you're acting these ways to find a boyfriend, that's not the kind of boyfriend that you want.
Jennifer, that was a golden word, and God bless you for your courage in saying it. And I do think that there's something here that these books are often very, very attractive to girls, young women, who may feel like they can live some kind of vicarious romance through the girls in these books. And by the way, that happens among boys, too. That's why boys love to read adventure literature and all the rest. But when it comes to something like this, there is real injury to the heart of a young woman who would internalize this kind of picture of what womanhood is supposed to look like. It's an ugly, sexualized picture that will bring great harm. I'll be right. Some final thoughts. This is the Albert Muller Program. Well, welcome back. I was certain we would have an interesting conversation about this, because this hits where we all live. And if you care about teenagers and you care about children, this is right where it hits home, in terms of what they're reading, in this case, teenage girls. I want to go to Ann calling from Solon, Ohio. Go ahead, Ann. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for being on the program. I'm concerned. I call it sexual harassment. You got it on the news. You got it everywhere, even in the churches. It's called sexual harassment. These are basically sexual harassing the young guys. And if the guys look or touch, then they're charged with sexual harassment. But on the other hand, it's the ladies that's doing it, and it's getting out of, it's really out of hand.
Yeah,
now you have kids like 4 years old and up saying what it takes to be popular with a guy. We close up those tight pants or short shorts and all that, what boys like at age 4.
Now, and you're the mother of a teenage son, right?
I'm a mother of a teenage son. He's 16.
And are you worried about him?
I am more than worried about him. It scares me because everywhere he goes, it's like he's tempted. I mean, they say don't look. I mean, how are you not going to look when it's all around you? Where you look is there.
Okay, and I really appreciate your call, and I want to tell you why, because I think it's fascinating as I come to a conclusion here to remember that these are books that are directed towards teenage girls, in which they are presented as sexually empowered by their adventures with boys. But I want you to note that on this program we have had more than one mom call concerned about her son. That ought to tell you something right there. It's one thing for girls to be told they can have power over boys by using their sex. It's another thing for these girls to grow up and have sons who are their responsibility, and then they're worried about these boys. Well, folks, we as parents are those who bear the responsibility. It's our task not only to lead and to discipline and to teach, but also to protect. And this means we have to be willing to say no. It means we also have to put the energy into finding out what our kids are reading and what they're watching and the music to which they are listening. That's our responsibility. We can't dedicate it and delegate it to someone else. This is our task. And we need to measure everything by a biblical standard. We must measure everything by whether or not it would bring glory to God. And you know, we all know that this kind of literature will bring anything but glory to God and anything but health and holiness and happiness to our kids. At the top of the program, I mentioned that Newsweek had apologized for its story about a supposed desecration of the Quran at Guantanamo Bay. Now this evening, Mark Whitaker, the editor of Newsweek, has released a statement which is a full retraction. He says, based on what we know now, we are retracting our original story that an internal military investigation had uncovered Quran abuse at Guantanamo Bay. It's important that we know that. It's a story we'll track with you, and we'll be back tomorrow to put truth on the line.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Mohler's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.